TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI. Trust-based relational intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello, and welcome back to the TBRI podcast. On this show, we talk all about trust-based relational intervention, or TBRI. We talk about different elements of the model itself, and also about how TBRI is applied in various systems of care and practice. I'm Emily Pickett, producer of the podcast, and I'm so excited to bring you the fourth season of our podcast. This season has some really special conversations, and we are so honored and excited to introduce you to these amazing guests from all over the world. And today's guest is actually from our very own backyard here at Texas Christian University in Fort Worth, Texas. Today's guest is TCU faculty member Dr. Debbie Ray. Dr. Ray is also the creator and director of the LINC Project. LINC, or Let's Inspire Innovation in Kids, is an initiative to address the needs of the whole child by incorporating more unstructured outdoor play as part of the school day. Now, if you have been around TBRI for any length of time, you will understand how compatible these two models are. Our host, Sarah Mercado, sat down with Dr. Ray to talk about LINC and the importance of play, and they actually had so much to talk about that we're going to split their conversation into two episodes. So today you will hear about LINC and the research behind Dr. Ray's work, and then be sure to meet us back here next week for part two of their conversation.
All right. Welcome, Dr. Ray. May I call you Debbie?
Absolutely. It's good awesome. To see you, Sarah.
It's so good to see you, and thanks for being here. We could not imagine doing another season of the podcast without talking about play, and there's nobody better to do that with than you. So would you just take a few minutes and tell us, you know, a little bit about yourself? How did we get to know one another, LINC and the KPICD? And then we'll get more into play once we know a little more about you.
All right. So thanks, Sarah, and thanks for having me on. I love to talk about play anytime, anywhere. So who am I? I've been an educator for 42 years. I started off in middle school and high school teaching and coaching, and then shifted over into the university level and started training teachers in physical education. And my main emphasis through all those early years was more on trying to elevate the performance of an athlete through the mental performance side, then it was about really focusing on how do we create intrinsic motivation in kids and really help them to understand how they pursue active lifestyles for a lifetime. But as my life transitioned, so did my interest in kids. And it became such a focus that in 2011, I traveled to Finland to learn more about what they were doing that was helping kids be really thrive in school life and outside of school life and for a lifetime. And what had transpired back in that time was that over the last 20 to 30 years, Finland had been at the lowest part of the global academic ranking. I mean, they were at the bottom in an F. And through the years, when they became their own country again and really owned up to what they felt helped kids learn and be successful with social emotional pieces and so forth, was that they needed to play more. They needed to be outside more. And they needed that active time every hour for 15 minutes. So I went over there. I studied. I learned a lot about it. Came back. And in 2012, started working with school districts and private schools to bring unstructured play back to the school day. And I don't know, for your audience, I'm just going to remind the audience that in the United States, we have less than 20 minutes of recess, which we equate with unstructured play. We have 20 minutes or less daily. And if they need tutoring, or they are not acting right, then they are punished by not going to recess. So they get zero time to play in a school day, which can last anywhere from 7 hours to 8 hours, 8.5 hours. So when I came back asking kids to do 60 minutes of recess, 15 minutes, four times a day, and a character development curriculum called Positive Action, which really emphasizes the number one thing is empathy, understanding how to be empathetic with others, and then trust, respect, building self-confidence, building that motivational level that's more intrinsic, self-esteem, really getting self-esteem from things that you accomplish yourself instead of things that others do for you. All of those things were part of it. So how did I come from that and introducing it in schools to TBRI? Well, after I'd been in it about 4 or 5 years and working with schools, I realized that we would get in with some of these schools, and it'd be like a one or two school out of a district of 10 or 12 schools that were trying it. And they were having more, what I would say is in your field, it was more trauma or abuse kinds of situations that were creating chaos when it would come to going outside for unstructured play four times a day. We didn't have the skill set to work with that avenue and our unstructured play and character piece. So, you know, you're on the same campus as I am, and I've heard about you for years with what KPICD is doing and TBRI and the strategies behind that. And I went, oh my gosh, why are we not talking about how we can work with each other on resources? And y'all were thinking the same thing. Why are we not talking to her? You know, so we've been doing our thing for a while, but it was time to start bringing us together. And so we talked, and we've been running together ever since.
I know, and I am so thankful. It just makes me reflect back on, you know, when I was a kid, we were like sent outside to play. It wasn't like, you know, our parents didn't structure our playtime very much at that point. But now it seems like, and maybe it's just the society here, maybe it's somewhat global, I don't know, that we are so focused on achievement that we have forgotten that play is actually what gets our kids to a place of being able to, you know, quote unquote, achieve these things. We see preschools that have heavy learning in them and heavy expectations that the kids can sit and listen and do these things that we know that developmentally they aren't even made to do yet. But now you've taken this approach of saying, not only do we need to slow down this, but we actually need to continue for a long time throughout development of adding play in. And I'm just curious, can you kind of share with us the science behind that and what so many people, including me, when I first learned TBRI, were motivated by the science in the brain and what's going on, because it's such a different way of doing things than we have ever known. And so I'm wondering if you could help us with the science around why do we stop four times a day for 15 minutes when it seems so contrary to what we've been taught to do?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to talk about that. So unstructured play, and we'll get into, I'm sure we'll get into the, you know, what that's all about in a little bit. But let's start with this. When we're able to go outside to engage in nature, play, active levels, whatever it may be, the outdoors, the science behind the outdoors is that being in the sun boosts the immune system. The outdoors produces the parasympathetic nervous system response, which is relaxed state. And the focus that we have indoors is very target focused. Whereas when we go outside, we build what's called a field focus. ADHD, many times, is the lack of field focus merge with target focus. So when we go outside, we can see, you know, the grand wonderful part of nature. And we see all the trees, and I'll just say we're somewhere where we're not. We're in the mountain, you know, we see the mountains and we see the water down at the below the mountains, and we see all this beautiful, we may even hear trickling of water down the waterfalls or whatever it may be. And we're just seeing nature, right? We're seeing a lot of maybe blue skies with a few puffy white clouds, but we're seeing nature. And all of a sudden, off in the future, you know, over in the on a mountainside, we see a bear. And we go, oh, okay, the bear's not too close, but oh, man, there's a bear. And so we start looking at the bear, and we're focused on that. Well, what we've done is we've gone from a field focus of really looking at the landscape to narrowing into a target focus, which is the bear. And then we go, okay, the bear, it's just playing, and we're losing the attention of that. So we go back to field focus again, and we start looking at where things are and what people are doing and where do I want to be, and we start moving around, and then all of a sudden we see this huge bird, and we look up and go, oh my gosh, it's an eagle. And we see that flying over. And so we target focus on the eagle. What that's doing is it's preparing our brains to be able to go in and out of that broad and narrow focus, which is target and field focus. That prevents a lot of the ADHD qualities from coming into the body, into the brain. And that's important for us to get that. And when we're indoors all the time, we lose the ability to go in and out of that target and field focus that's so important. So those are three things that are just related to the outdoors. Now, I can see you're wanting to ask a question. Do you want to ask something on that before I go to the next part? Or
I'm just so intrigued because we haven't talked about that before. And so I knew that in this conversation, I would learn something new. And so I think about so many of our kids, when we think about that developmental track, and we expect a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old with trauma, who we know has developmental delays, to sit and do work all day long, that we're literally asking them to do something they're not capable of doing. And that, right. And then we start to see these symptoms that could be ADHD, but it could also be trauma. It could also be a lack of development. And it sounds like to me, and I'm not holding you to this scientifically, but it sounds like simply doing things like outside play and shifting that focus would help remedy a lot of those symptoms that we see. And so you just kind of blew my mind with that. We haven't talked about that before. And I don't know if that's, you know, I'm not saying it's a cure-all for somebody who truly has ADHD. I don't want to misrepresent that at all, but I do think it's important to take note of that and know that simply by going out in the sunshine, whether you have a mountain or not, it can be really powerful.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
I will say something that will back up what I just said.
Okay.
And you're saying it, and I'm agreeing with it. We will take care of a lot of kids who have symptomatic characteristics, but are not necessarily symptomatic. Mm-hmm. So I call them ADHD like, L-I-K-E. They're sure. Like it. Mm-hmm. But once you get them outside and they start getting those breaks throughout the day, they lose those characteristics and they become more normalized into the classroom the way that they need to be, because they're able to get the fidgety behaviors out and go outside and do what they need to do. So let me give you an example of this. With our Link kids, when they've gone outside and played and played and played for that 15 minutes and come back in, we don't see them needing the wiggle balls and the treadmill things. And they don't need that stuff because they're able to come in and get right back to work within 30 seconds to a minute and a half, including little kids. They're able to get back to work and they're able to focus, and they know that they only have to focus for this long and then they're going outside again where they can really rejuvenate. So what we found, just really quickly, is these kids, when we first started and we were measuring baseline data on them before we ever put them in the recesses throughout the day, these kids were like popcorn. They were up and down. They were pulling things out of cabinets. They were going over to the window. They were drooling on their desk from going to sleep. They were going and sharpening their pencil a lot. They were all over the place. And they were ADHD-like, right? They were just, they couldn't focus. And this is the majority of the class. And it was every class we would go in was like that. When I was growing up, we sat very still, but we were getting recess throughout the day. This was many years ago, 50 years ago. Anyway, when we started Link, we noticed that now the majority of the class was sitting and doing their work and being very calm, and there was nothing going on except what they were focused on. And very few, what I call spikes, very few kids who could not attend even after going to recess. I mean, we're talking one or two in a classroom, whereas before it would be 18 out of 20. So can I say that there's something to this? Absolutely, I can.
It's amazing.
On the other side, just to give you a little more science, is that we know, and I know you talk about this in TBRI, but the neurological activity that is spurred on as a result of moving is very, very important. They're building those neurological systems so that they can use different levels of thinking. They can produce different emotions with the experiences that they're having. Whereas without that movement and being outside and really getting that physiological generation of neurons, they don't connect well with experiences. And I know y'all know that too. That's something we really have in common with what we're working with. But that's a huge piece of why we do what we do, is because the more neurological highways we can build in their brains from being outside and being active throughout the day, the more they're able to synthesize information as they get older and get into those places where they've got to compartmentalize and put things in place where it needs to be. They don't have near the issues when they're able to really build this when they're younger and continue to build them throughout their lifespan. And then the last thing I would say is, from a social emotional perspective, these kids today, doesn't matter what level they're in, are asked or told to be quiet for 7.5 hours. No socialization time. They may have a 5-minute walking period or 7-minute walking period, but because they're on phones all the time so much, they've conditioned themselves that they're still going to text in the hallways, or they may walk and talk for a minute, but there's very little conversation that's going on. Because of being zero in the cafeteria, zero noise out, you know, in the classroom, zero in the hallways, zeros on the buses. So it's just those kind of things are huge for the social emotional piece as well. Mm-hmm. Learning each other's languages, learning how to fall. That's how they learn, is out there. And the most important, that's where they learn how to learn. You can't learn how to learn in the classroom. You learn how to learn at play.
It's just so fascinating, because I think that even one thing I want to say really briefly before we move on is that it's interesting, because as an adult, I, you know, primarily work from home. I did that before COVID, other than when I was traveling for work. And I make it a point to several times a day to go for what I call a mailbox walk, because I live in the country. Our listeners, if they've heard any other episodes, have heard this. You know, it's about a 1/4-mile round trip to my mailbox and back. It doesn't take 5 minutes, but it gets me out. I feel better. I feel like I can focus. And that's a need. I just take care of myself and know that it means throughout my day, I'll be able to work and focus longer. And so I think it's interesting when we consider what we need is no different than what our kids need. And then secondly, I would say, or I wanted to ask you really briefly, within the Link program, is it allowed for kids to lose their recess time for behavior? Because I know that's a really hard thing within schools. I understand that they have a limited capacity for what they can do to try to corral the kids. But what do you say to that kind of idea of removing recess for behavior?
So, great question. And it's one that I tackled hugely when I first started. And the answer is this. It seems counterintuitive that the more you do recess, the harder it is to control the kids, because they're so bad on the front end. And so you want to punish them or hold that over them so that they'll do what they need to do and work in class and then go to recess. And they want them to go to recess. It's not that they don't, but they just don't know how to control that they're not doing what they need to do in class. And they feel like they're reinforcing them for not working in class. So what I told them was, it's really counterintuitive to what they think. When they're only getting one recess a day of 15 to 20 minutes, they end up coming back in and they may be just fine after that first recess, but then they go for this long period of time with no outdoor or any walking or anything like that. And so the teacher says, well, you're not working like you should, so tomorrow I'm going to withhold your recess. Well, now you've just punished the kids and they're like, well, what do I have to lose? I'm just going to go ahead and mess up.
Right.
So what I told them is this: the more recess, the unstructured play or the outdoor time that they have, the better they're going to behave in class. And you're not going to have to worry about whether you have to punish them or not. But when we first started, we just said you cannot withhold recess because they've done something wrong or they're not doing their work or they need to do tutoring. They have to go to recess. So a link policy, when a school signs on, they're agreeing to the kids will go to recess, whether they have done something wrong in class or not, they will still go.
Yeah. And I would like to point out that for families too, one of the first things we often do when our kids are dysregulated is to say, you can't have this outside time or, and I think like, I like to tell people, like, when I figured that out in my own home, it's like I realized I was punishing myself more than the kid because they remained dysregulated. Like, their regulation never was resolved. Their dysregulation was never resolved because what they needed was that outside, that time to play.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.